You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
And we're off. Welcome to episode 17 of the Beer Tour Guy Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson from Motor City Brew Tours. And with me, I got a foamy looking beer here that Mr. Adam is doing from Axel Brewing called Noble Ghost. So welcome, Adam, to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
State your full name, your social security number, a couple credit card numbers for the episode.
Sure. It's Adam Beretta, 385. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks for having me on, though. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. I've been wanting to have you on for a while. Now that I'm 17 episodes in, it's kind of proven that I know 17 people at least that I could get nice. On a show, nice. Right? Since I'm doing this monthly now, it's been a lot of fun here at the Podcast Detroit Studios in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. So you made it. Thank you for coming kind of midday on a Wednesday.
Cheers.
So what did you say you were working on that you just kind of left the brewery and said, I got to go?
Well, we're in the middle of releasing another barrel project, Livernois Barrel Project. I'm with Axel Brewing Company, head brewer. We've had three releases so far, two in bottle, one just draft. This is going to be our fourth release. We did a collaboration with the Detroit City Distillery. We use their bourbon and their rye barrels. We're going to blend that together to hopefully get what we need.
That sounds yummy.
Yep, pretty excited about it. I just got to taste a couple of the barrels on my way out. Sullivan Rob is taking care of everything.
How do you taste a barrel?
Very carefully. use little pipettes to fish a little bit out, and then it at least gives you the, I guess, presentation of what the beer is going to be. Allows me to give a description to the staff and ownership to get the label and everything started.
Cool. Okay, we jumped right into that, but we'll back up. So I've known you for a good amount of time now, I'd say.
Say at least 4 years. Maybe closer to six.
Yeah, maybe closer to six now that I think about it. So let's talk about kind of your brewing background, kind of where did you start? What got you interested and where did you start brewing? And then kind of what got you up here to beautiful Axel Brewing in Ferndale?
Well, I was one of those home brewers that inspired to hopefully start my own brewery someday. From there, it was just the passion, love, enjoyed brewing. Worked a factory job, and from there they
Like you work in a factory.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to lie to you. You kind of got that look to you.
Yeah, it's
got to
be the sideburns. Right?
I think so. Yeah,
probably. New addition. People are.
You got some tattoos. You look like you could start a fight if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think.
I don't want to say all factory workers are like that, and I don't want a bunch of factory workers to like stalk me and take me out or anything. It's not like that.
I think it's more to keep me out of fights.
Oh. You know,
if you got the look, then nobody really wants to mess with you.
That's good idea. I should do that. I look a little too clean cut, so I look like I would be trying to get out of a fight.
Right. Well, hopefully sometimes by doing this, it's same scenario.
Okay.
Keep me out of it.
Okay, so you're not getting in fights and you're home brewing.
Yeah, home brewed for probably 6 to 7 years plus, a little bit here or there, fell out of it. Worked with a gentleman by the name of Bill Gerds, who's now in Raleigh, North Carolina, running two breweries. He got into it harder than I did and started asking me more questions. And I finally one day told him, stop asking me questions. Teach me what the hell you're talking about. We became good friends, started home brewing together. We both won a few medals on the homebrew circuit. And from there, the economy kind of took a shit. Both of us lost our job.
So this would be like 2008, 2009?
2008, to be exact.
2008, okay. Look at that. Yep. I knew when that economy took a shit.
He was actually working Redwood Lodge, part-time job, probably 15, 20 hours a week, just kind of, I hate to use this term, scrub bitch. But
right, but that's kind of where you start in
entry
the beer
level
world.
Entry level is not cleaning. Fun. Yeah, it's scrubbing, it's cleaning kegs, nothing glorious as the brewery.
So Redwood Lodge and Brewery, just for folks to know, that's in Flint.
In Flint, correct.
Kind of the crossway, I-75 and 23.
Correct. And due to the lead conditions in the water, they're technically Mundy Township. So,
oh, my God.
I'll give them that little plug.
Yeah, I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yep. As a joke, they wanted to put lead-free on the doors just to keep people in. Actually, it did help keep people
You know,
in.
That does make sense. I remember reading articles about, what is it, Tenacity's
Flint.
Yeah, that's the one in downtown. So they were the one that really were affected from the Flint water crisis.
Absolutely.
And I remember reading articles with them in it, and I'm thinking, wow, you feel for them going through that.
Absolutely.
Because what's the average Joe from out of market to do? They don't want to go there.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, in my opinion, Flint was just starting to really get a little bit of gravity and grow and starting to draw younger kids in.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
It kind of lost that
I'm sure it
development
did.
Feel, you know. Now it's starting to get back on track, I believe.
Because you live in Davison,
correct.
Right? So out,
correct.
A bit outside of Flint,
yep.
So to speak.
About 25 minutes from Flint.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's a bit outside of me.
Right.
But yeah, okay. That's like the other end of the world for me, I guess.
Right.
Living in Berkeley, Michigan.
So. Yeah, and if you don't go that direction, it's really out of the way.
I have a friend who lives up in Davison, though. Actually, he's just up there. He's a really good home brewer. Brian Whiteman?
Yeah, I know
you ever
he
met
is.
Him?
Yep,
yeah,
sure do.
He's part of – I don't know if he's part of that homebrew club up there. Was this the homebrew club you were part of at one point? What's that called?
Lab La Pieria Brewers.
Oh, no. Okay. What am I thinking of? Was there –
There's a couple
Kraft?
In Flint.
Kraft?
Kraft no. is actually down towards
down
this area,
here?
Like 59,
okay.
The township, Shelby Township area.
Okay. Whoops. Then
yep.
not that one.
Yeah.
All right. I don't. Oh, Snobs.
Snobs was Pontiac, yeah.
Yeah, that's yep. right. Snobs.
Yep.
That's what I'm thinking of. He was part of that for a while.
Right. They supported 51 North pretty hard.
Yeah.
I guess,
yeah, yeah.
sorry, getting off track, but
that's all right. We'll
the
get
second
to that.
Brewery, I was fortunate enough at Redwood Lodge to take over shortly after they won Brew Pub of the Year.
Right.
So we were getting a lot of fame. It was a lot of attention going their way.
That's when you came up on my radar screen,
yep.
honestly.
It was wonderful for the
we
resume.
Didn't meet yet, though, but yeah, yep. I definitely knew what was going on.
Yep, and they really kind of took me under their wing, helped me get on the brew house, teach me all about brewing professionally, not just being that, you know, the scrub bitch. And I kind of pushed my way because I needed the job, needed the hours, and Bill Wombe, Conrad Connor were my mentors at the time. Conrad still the or is now
still
the
head brewer,
is
right?
now the head brewer,
but Bill
Wombe,
was at that time.
Correct.
Yep.
He's doing a couple things. I think he's working at Northern Oak and the one in Lapeer, Tilted Axis.
Okay. But at one point he was at the one in Clarkston.
He's been all over the place.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's the last time I'd seen him, but I knew he was doing stuff. At
he
Tilted
was helping,
Axis.
Helping Parker's Hilltop.
That's right.
For a little
Parker's
while.
Hilltop. Yep. Sorry. Yep.
Yep.
I brought a group in there last fall. I don't remember the date now. And he was there. In fact, they made him mm-hmm. come in and talk with my group,
right?
Right? Which I kind of knew him, but I didn't know him like great. And he's not like he's Mr. Jump on the Radio, do an interview all
no.
bubbly. I got nothing against him. And I really enjoyed the beer I had. Trust me, my whole group did. And that's a huge place.
As much as I love him, give him a couple beers and he becomes more talkative.
Yeah. I think I caught him on a good day like that, mm-hmm. right? Like we had a good conversation. But it was the first time I really ever had that with him.
Yep.
So I was appreciative to get that, right? I don't always get that opportunity.
Right.
A lot of times I come in on a Saturday to a brewery and the brewer's not available. Manager comes out and talks. I fill in the holes kind of thing, right? But that wasn't the case there.
No.
So, okay.
Yep.
So he's jumped around. He was at Redwood Lodge with you.
Correct. He actually helped get Redwood Lodge probably to be one of the most awarded breweries in Michigan.
Wow.
Still.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think him and Rockne, which is the local Bastogne, are battling for that number one spot.
Right.
I think Rockne kind of edged him out on the last GABF.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, I don't know what the numbers would be on that.
I'd have to look into it, but it's really close. They're both the only two in Michigan that won Brew Pub of the Year, as well as many of GABF and World Beer Cup.
I never thought about it. Those are the yep. only two in the state that ever
Absolutely.
Won Brew Pub of the Year. I mean, that is pretty prestigious, obviously. Wow.
Yeah.
I want to like write that down later.
It's amazing that this much talent is still in the state.
That hasn't been pulled
it.
Away.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely killing it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So you're learning a lot of great stuff there.
Absolutely. Went to the Great Baraboo. It was kind of a Hail Mary for me. Didn't know if I was ready to step out, you know, on my own and become a head brewer. That was a one-man show. They had a few problems along the way, kind of brought me in to help clean up the place. Was probably the most difficult place I've ever worked. Fermenters are in the middle of the dining room. So for me is thinking I have to clean these with chemicals and try to be safety focused. I cannot or will not wash those during the daytime with customers there.
Right.
So for me, I turned it into a third shift, did everything in the midnight, was horrible. I'm not a night person like that. So it was miserable for me. I felt like a zombie for a couple
That was
kind years.
Of when I first met you. And I remember asking yep. you like, what are your hours like? And then you were explaining this to me and thought, holy crap.
Yep.
Wow.
You know,
that's rough.
The main reason was just because safety. If something was to happen, one of the hoses pop or anything, you're going to spray the entire restaurant with caustic.
Right.
Lawsuits.
That's why breweries don't design things that way anymore.
Shouldn't.
Or never should have, honestly.
But some still do. I mean, a lot of times you get somebody that has never been in the industry or never worked with some of this equipment that just doesn't understand some of the nuances of it.
Sure.
But it took me probably a good 3 months to get that system back to where I was comfortable. I was comfortable with the beer. Within the first, I think the first World Expo, I took my first medal with them. I ended up taking a gold for my wheat, light wheat ale. And I'll never forget the time I had one of the brewers. I don't know if it was the Michigan Beer Barons or Detroit Beer Barons that came by.
Detroit Beer Barons, yeah.
I was petrified. You know, here's all the people that I idolized as a young brewer coming in to beat me up on my beer. Never forget Dan Rogers was like, give me the lightest beer you have. My first thought was, oh, shit, he's going to butcher me. Ended up telling me it's good. It's sweet. Kind of like Miller Lite. I could see why people like it.
Dan Rogers, brewmaster for Griffin Claw Brewing Company, very award-winning.
Correct.
Brewer. Just for folks who don't know.
Right. You know, and the Coonans were there, a few other local Detroit guys. And like,
I see why you were nervous.
I got nothing but good results.
So you were feeling pretty good there.
I was on top of the world when they left, you know.
I could tell you this, that when you first reached out to me, you had gone through those first couple months at Baraboo and said, hey, I've been working really hard and I know you do these bus tours. And then I eventually agreed and I brought a group out. And we had a good time. You were there. You showed us around. We had a bunch of good beers. I was pretty happy. I think I did that maybe twice.
Two or three times. Yeah, I think it might have been 3 times.
Two or three. Because I think I had a private tour somewhere in there too. Yeah. And that's kind of how I do it. I rotate around that way anyhow. Someday I'll even come into Axel. Woo-hoo. I just haven't had the right opportunity to do it.
Right.
But
the street's almost done construction. Yeah. And they do have bike lanes. So that's another possibility.
Yeah. I got a different idea for the bike part of it. So that is that's a separate conversation we'll do offline. So you're at the Baraboo. You worked hard there for how long were you there? About 2 years?
Not quite. It was about a year and 9 months.
Okay.
And it was just my time. Was lucky enough that the guys from 51 North were wanting to start. Lake Orion, the owners, original owners came up and just wanted to meet me. And it was lucky enough that through a Master Brewers Association meeting, Conrad ended up talking to Don, which was the owner of 51 North. He kind of sent him my way cause he knew that I was wanting to get off third shift as well as closer to home. That saved me almost 30 minutes plus on my drive.
Yeah, what a huge – I remember when I saw that you got the job, I thought, oh, wow, I get it. Okay.
Yep. You know,
life is easier there.
And brewing is a weird job because there's only so many jobs out there. You sometimes have to take what you can get. Wasn't ready to walk away from my house. I was still underwater because I bought it the worst time.
Sure.
So I was comfortable where I was at. I loved my neighbors, and it was not time for me to move away. So I felt like it was time for me to find another job. The guys at 51 North came in, tried all my beers. He said he hated pumpkin ale, but loved my pumpkin ale. And it's like, well, you know, I still don't like them, you know, but glad you like it. From there, it led to multiple conversations and then finally came aboard before they even opened. They were hoping to open, I was pulling it back. I want to say the fall of 2013. And, of course, it's never as easy as what everybody thinks to really open a brewery. Due to sometimes legal issues, sometimes construction issues, and equipment just doesn't come in.
City, right?
Yeah,
city all, was
all
tricky
the above.
And Lake Orion.
All the above, you know. And when the city is your landlord, it makes it difficult as well.
Because the city owned that building, correct? Or
correct.
The land?
The DDA,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah. Because so, that I mean, was the DDA's office at one point?
Yes.
I always found it an interesting building.
Yes.
I guess I didn't have to brew beer in it, but I found it as a customer as an interesting building.
Yep. It was unique. There's a lot of things that we could have done with it. We just decided to put the brewery in the back. We had a old, from the way I heard, it was a Firestone Walker's original system.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not 100% on that, but that's kind of the way it came through when we bought the system. It was a stackable fermenters and brights. So we had tall ceilings. It just made sense to decrease the brewery size, go up in elevation, and it worked. Was extremely happy with, you know, the way things transferred. I didn't lose a lot of product. Was a new experience for me. But I was able to put boots on the ground and help them construct that entire place and get it running. Was in construction probably 6 months before we opened.
Wow.
So I got to see that from ground floor up. It was cool to see everything, but it was very, very stressful and difficult. I could see why sometimes people give up on the dream of doing this. You know, lack of money, lack of really understanding effort and time that it's really going to put into it. From there, we opened up and like hit the World Beer Cup almost right off the bat. I finally convinced these guys, let's at least try for a medal. Lo and behold, we ended up coming back with a gold, and I still can't believe it. To this day, I still can't
remind
believe
me
it.
The beer that was the gold on.
Windwalker Brown Ale.
Windwalker Brown. That's right. Okay.
Yep. You know. And
thank you. I remember drinking it. I remember seeing the medal. I remember seeing everything yep. when I would come in to see you. And yeah,
that's one of them styles that is just not a sexy style.
It's not, but it's a style I love to drink. I guess because we're a little older and we kind of came of age in that world yep. of when that was some of the first styles we got to enjoy.
I was going to say not to be disrespectful, but I think it's older generation ooh, like us, you know. But,
okay, like you us, know, you yeah. said it like that though. Yeah, okay,
yeah. I wasn't just going to throw you under the bus. Okay, that was help too. But I mean, honestly, I'd say the older clientele usually go for the reds, the browns, the ambers.
Very much so.
The sweeter, maltier styles because they grew up with the Killians and the other, they call them dark beers. Yeah. You know, we know that's not true.
Yeah, when I was at college in the 90s, yeah. that's when Killians came of age and was really introduced by Coors. And all those other breweries started doing knockoffs like Red Wolf from Anheuser-Busch and stuff like that. And then local breweries, because I went to Western Michigan, so I had Bell's that opened up their tasting room basically
right.
in the 90s to the public. Prior to that, they were just brewing beer. And those were some of those styles, right? Like Best Brown from Bell's was absolutely. Like my beer for like a long – it still is to this day when I get a chance to drink it. Just has a shorter lifespan now, and I'm sure they get that
right.
about it. So yeah, I could see why then. Did you find it at the time that category wasn't as, I don't know, competitive?
It was pretty average, if not a little above average.
Okay.
I want to say the entries were around 72 to 77 entries.
That
so,
seems
I mean,
competitive.
It was decent. You know, it was, I'd say within the average. You don't see the IPAs going that low. IPAs are hitting anywhere from 200 to 400
yeah,
entries
that's what
per
I
category.
Would think. Okay.
Your smoked ales are still 40. 45.
Oh, that seems like a lot to me. Okay.
You know, it's playing numbers sometimes when you enter things. And
is it?
It's sometimes just having the beer that you can't get enough of that you think is absolutely fantastic. You have to go for it. Some people do play the numbers, though. They look at what the year previous or a few years previous and then try to shoot for that because they have a better opportunity.
I always assume people looked at it that way at times.
Some do, some don't. To me, I just find it a little bit too much effort, you know, and you get overly hopeful when you see maybe the dry stout was one of them. There wasn't very many entries, but everybody I know that's entered other than Rockford has been pretty much booted out or have never meddled with it.
Right.
It's frustrating when you look at that. You know it's a good
beer.
They
have a good dry stout.
Yeah, Rockford's great. Like, oh my God, it's one of my favorite dry stouts.
They have a good brown ale.
Yep. Yeah.
In fact, they're canning a brown ale.
And
now.
As a matter of fact, he's one that edged me out.
Interesting.
Yep. The funny thing is, I ended up, you're not supposed to talk about this, but they give you an entry little slip if you make it to the medal round or the final round.
Oh, okay.
That next GABF at 51 North, I ended up going to the final round with my brown, the medal round with my tangerine wheat, and I had a third one, the rye, the Spencer Island rye.
Okay.
Ended up going to the medal round. So when they won, like, I'm like, damn it.
So you knew you were right in there.
Yeah,
with them.
Was in the final round. I'm not sure how many they picked from, but like I was definitely sniffing on a medal in there too.
Well, I could definitely say I've been to the brewery multiple times. That is a good brown ale too. So that
they
is why they
good job.
Yeah, that's why they've started canning that. I've seen that and they've mm-hmm. just announced that recently, like, I don't know, maybe it could be longer, but a few months ago, I think.
Right.
Might even be able to buy it in this market. I'm not
right.
sure.
You know, I think I misspoke myself earlier. Rockford has a small brew pub.
Yes. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, there's three of them now.
Oh, Michigan. Sorry.
So I think I said Bastogne.
You know what? You're right.
Redwood. I didn't even.
Wasn't that like last year?
Yeah.
It was recent. Crap. You said that. And then when you said that, I thought, wow, I don't really know the stat on that.
Right.
Huh.
I just wanted to give them the credit where credit's due.
Oh, that's cool.
Great guys out there.
Yeah,
no,
was it Seth and
the
other part?
Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, I've met them both. You know, it's one of those interesting places. Like every once in a while, I'll do a day trip bus tour with Motor City Brew Tours out there. And for a while, I was doing a route that included Rockford in it.
Nice.
I've probably done that. I might have done that as many as five times now.
Nice.
But it might not be, you know, it might be every 2 years. And I was always amazed that like I would – email them, super responsive. Hey, we'd love to have you back, right? Like they remember who I am. And then I go there and it's like the staff would remember who I was, which tells you a lot. Like they hired in, they have really good staff in there, a really good team, and they pay attention to things and they've kind of retained them.
Right.
It's a good sign that it's good management and it's good ownership when you see something like that. And every time I've gone in there, I've kind of felt that way. Like I'm like, how did that server remember me from like 2 years ago? And
it's a beautiful little pub too. What they've done, the location is just the gorgeous. Look of it is, yep, really like it.
Yeah, as a biker, having that right off the White Pine Trail, bike trail, it's so ideal. Like if I could ever design, like if I lived in that town, that would be kind of my dream setup. Is, well, wow, I got a brewery right off a bike trail, and they're doing all that in there.
And like you said, there's several that are fairly close within biking to where you could set a tour. You could set two or three on a loop and really enjoy it.
I'll be doing a two-day Grand Rapids bike tour next year. I won't be going out on that end of town. I'll be doing the kind of out toward where the airport is in Grand Rapids on a real interesting route that'll be 2 days worth and about five – I think I have five different breweries that I'm going to work with on that.
Nice.
That should be pretty fun. White Flame,
Are you bringing camping gear and camping in between?
So, no. So, it's going to be like a yuppie version of a two-day bike tour, meaning we're going to have a hotel that's like a center point on it. So, it's like a Hyatt Place hotel. I know that sounds like it's fancy, but that's their mid-tier hotel. And it's right off M6, the highway there. And the trail is right – there's one trail that's right off of that. I think it's the M6 trail now that I say that. Yeah. And then I can intersect, and all their bike trails connect out there. So I found a way to connect it. My wife and I did it this July where we rode it. We rode 2 days of riding, and we figured out these towns to go into that would be breweries you might not normally go to, right? So day two would be out all the way into Hudsonville, I think, what I'm planning.
Very cool.
So you got, Pike 51 White Flame right in there. Yep. We might utilize I can't think of all the other places. It doesn't matter. But yeah, that's fun stuff when you get to work on that. And running a tour company, I have to be thinking like a year out like that because I don't always get a lot of down weekends. So when I get a down weekend, it's like, okay, I already have like a work assignment. So my work assignment, well, it's fun. We got to bike and go to breweries, right?
Right.
But it was thinking that through, like would people dig that, right? So I always design around the fact if I dig it, then there's got to be some other people that probably dig it.
Yep.
And we keep it pretty simple. So you can stay at the hotel if you want to, but you don't have to, but that's where we bike out of. And then you bike. So it's like, do that route, come back to where the hotel is. Day two, go a different direction and come back to where the hotel is.
Nice.
And then you're drinking, sampling at the stops.
I believe that trail actually goes all the way to Cadillac, if I'm not mistaken.
The White Pine Trail definitely does. Yep. Yeah. The White Pine Trail, the Fred Meyer.
Right.
White Pine Trail, because Meyer Company, or Fred Meyer, the founder, gave millions and millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
To bike trails in West Michigan. It's the whole reason of what's attracted me. I almost moved out there at one point.
Agreed.
For all that. Oh, we really got off the subject though, didn't we?
Oh, that's fine.
Rockford Bruin.
That's what these are for.
Yeah. So 51 North. So eventually 51 North closes.
Correct. Writing was kind of on the wall.
Yeah, I think you made it pretty clear to me.
Yep.
Last time I saw you in there prior to it closing.
They knew a few things were going on, high debt. We had landlords that were either ready to sell the building out from under us because we couldn't buy it directly from them. So it made it kind of a puzzling finish. I ended up getting an offer from these guys, Axel, and from there it was time.
You had to make the right – you had to do what was right for you. That's for sure.
You know, and I told –
that's a bummer though.
I told the owners I would help them, you know, walk through everything, and I was actually going to go management bartender for them just to kind of help them through everything. I had to take the right opportunity for me and my wife.
Sure. Yeah.
Go from there.
Yeah. Now wife, right? Wasn't wife then, correct?
No. We got married shortly after all that happened.
Yeah. Sarah?
Sarah. Right? Correct.
And then this is the power of social media. I could just research stuff in like 5 minutes.
Right.
So picture posted, a little bump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations.
December 17th. Thank you very
much. I'm sorry. Say the date.
December 17th.
Holy
is the date.
Oh, holy crap. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't totally tell from the picture, but it looked pretty far along. Yeah, along.
It's on. You know,
sweet.
Yep. Got a pole barn going right now. We're trying to finish the baby room. So if you see dark circles under my eyes, that's exactly why. But.
You showed up with beer, and that's all I really saw at that point after we shook hands.
It was the shiny cans that helped me out. I'm okay with that.
Well, congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Little boy. It's going to be the only grandchild on both sides. So
both
the grandparents.
Okay. They must be excited.
Yeah, they're through the roof. Yeah.
Yeah, a boy. Yep. Boy, at least you can relate right away, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
excited. Let's not get into that conversation on the show.
Excited.
We'll probably get in trouble.
Yeah, nah, whatever. Troubles.
Right? Well, this is a podcast. It's only like five people listening to this right now. So
trust me, I've gotten worse trouble.
I'm sure you've gotten in worse trouble. That's why I like talking to you. That's the whole point. I don't want little choir boys on here. Okay, so let's see. You grew up in Mason, Michigan.
That's correct.
I have all kinds of like second cousins and stuff that live in the Mason area. I've been out to the, it's not called this now, but Spartan Speedway.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What's it called now? Lucas Oil Speedway or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. It's been so long. I can hear it from our house. When
You could really. Yeah. Okay. So I come from like a race car family.
Okay.
So my dad was a stock car racer, and then kind of post him graduating from MSU, he moved down here to Mount Clemens. He used to race when the former Gibraltar Trade Center, prior to Gibraltar Trade Center, that was Mount Clemens Speedway.
Yeah.
And it was this
I do remember that.
Horrible dirt track for a while. Then they paved it. And I can even remember that as a kid because he'd take me there as a kid. But he raced there for a long time. So I have all these cousins on my mom's side, second cousins, that grew up in the Mason area and still race at that track out there. So I'd say every other year. I was just out there, I don't remember, like in August maybe. And we went and watched some of my, I don't know how to say it, second cousins' kids. I don't know how you say it at that point. Race. Fun, nice, small town track. One of the last tracks I've ever can remember that lets you bring in a small cooler with beer.
I'm shocked they haven't changed that.
I can't believe they didn't change it. I'm still surprised. Like I was sitting there drinking decent beer in a can because as we're sitting here drinking crawlers, right? I could have a crawler. I could have anything good in a can now.
Yeah.
I'm sure I probably had the best beer out of the, you know, whatever people there.
They probably went back to cans because people were throwing bottles on the track. Yeah, it's a small rowdy town.
You know? Yeah, I would expect that.
I guarantee your second cousins or whatever probably dislike some of my family that still race up there.
You think so?
Oh, they're wild and crazy. You got to be a little bit nuts to do that anyways, but it's passion with anything else. And when you feel that you've been wronged, like they get pretty rough sometimes in the pit.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah. My dad to this day, though, still loves going to small tracks like that. That's kind of his thing. So that's kind of our father-son bonding is going to fun tracks all over Michigan and other states. Mason has a pretty good brewery. Have you ever been out there?
Bad Brewing Company.
Yeah.
I've heard there's another one that's potentially going to start as well.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's going to be in town or just outside of town, but I heard the Spartan Brewery is trying to open.
Oh, no, that is open, and that's considered – I don't think that's considered Mason where it is. I think it's considered Okemos.
Gotcha, because they were
right off the highway,
Mason,
though.
I haven't
the same
been
exit you would take to Mason.
Okay, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, I think it's called Spartan Brew Pub.
Yep. Yeah, I believe so.
I haven't been in there yet. Last time I was driving that way out into the Lansing market, I just didn't have time. I don't think they were open till later, so I didn't really pop in there.
Right.
Bad Brewing, though, let's see. It's Brian and Danielle.
Yeah,
that's what BAD stands for.
Yep.
Real nice couple.
Great people.
Yeah, I brought groups in there a few times. My wife loves – they have this what is it? It's like a purple cider. No, what's it called? It's like a grape cider, I think is what – and it's like, I don't know, 12% alcohol or something crazy like that. I know. I'm always worried though that she's just going to have one of those and then she can't drive me after that, right? Because that's my driver there. That's trouble.
Completely.
That is totally trouble.
That's why I try to make a little bit lighter beer because you can have two.
What's something I like about your tap list at Axel? Is that one, you have a huge tap list right now at Axel and you got a little bit of everything on there. I mean, anything from having a great Kolsch or this Noble Ghost Blonde that we're drinking right now. I mean, I'm really enjoying this beer.
Thank you.
To a lager, a pilsner, a pale, a bunch of IPA variants, a couple stouts, a double. Then you have cider and mead.
Correct.
And wine.
Correct.
Right? Oh my God.
We try to keep something for everything
so,
on there.
So no whiskey.
Except
what the
for
hell?
The sour people. I'm sorry. Like it's just we don't have the facilities to keep everything separate at this point.
You know, it's funny that unless you understand brewing, most people don't get that.
No.
That you – having sour, like you need a whole – kind of like how Jolly Pumpkin does it. Like their brewery in Dexter, their main brewery, is like split. And like the sour people aren't talking to the regular North Peak beer people or the beer on the right, right? The beer on the left is sour. The beer on the right is kind of everything else. And there's like a wall and, you know, you're –
Yeah, I think that's one of those like the clowns. You know, certain clowns hate each other. Certain brewers hate each other. If that was the case, like that would be kind of how it rolls. but I mean, you could cross contaminate so easy.
Oh yeah,
a lot of places that do it. When you look at the New Holland or some of the bigger companies, they actually change their clothes before going into the regular brewery from the cellar.
Oh,
or they
wow.
have special boots, or they have bleach mats, or
right.
some have sanitizer spray that sprays you as you're walking from department to department. I know BJ's killing his name. I can't think of the head brewer's name off the top of my head. It'll hit me in a couple minutes. But he actually will not let many of people coming in and not to be discriminate, but lactating women just because of
interesting.
Yeah, certain bacterias and wild yeast are
sure.
on the human body. So to bring that in your brewery, if you want full control, like there's many things that you could do to control. but some of them seem disrespectful. If you look in the eyes of a brewer, you're just trying to make the best product that you can.
Sure. Yep. But we've seen a lot of brewers dabble with sour lately.
Correct.
Like a lot.
Yep.
I was at Traffic Jam and Snug doing a tour, and that brewer did – he was part of the Detroit Beer Experiment beers where they all collaborate on something interesting. And this year was Faygo flavor. So he had a kettle sour with Red Pop. Man, was that red. And I thought, hey, man, you brewed that on your regular system? Like you just have the simplistic regular – well, that is a seven-barrel system there, I think.
Now, kettle sours are a little bit different.
Yeah, I realize that. But it was
easier to control.
Okay.
But in the same sense, you're still bringing that same bacteria in. So if you don't have means and the reason why I struggle not to bring it in is because I have a lot of light, low IBU beers, low alcohol beers that can help you control that. I think we would lose fundamentally a lot of the light beers if we started dabbling too much.
Yeah, I think you would. Yeah. Are you finding then that the customers coming in are drinking a lot of it on that side of the spectrum, on the lighter side?
Our top three selling beers are lighter beers.
Okay. Yep. I could see that. Noble Ghost,
this is our number one selling beer by far.
I could see why. This is a beer I've had before, and I've always kind of enjoyed it. I like the fact that a lot of brewers are doing beers like this or Kolsch's now. I'd say like 5 years ago, that wasn't real common.
No.
Either they had some horrible light lager or they didn't. And now we have a little more variety. And I drink stuff on the lower end of the spectrum on a pretty regular basis now that I'm a little older and like to social drink more than I like to, you know, really get wasted after two.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like I like to have three, four, five sometimes. And I can't do that if I'm having double IPAs or whatever. You know, not that I have anything against a double IPA. I just can't.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%.
Or even more sessionable IPAs. I mean, I'll admit it. When Founders first came out with all-day IPA, I'm not sure I was sold on that concept at first. Now I definitely have come around on that and will seek out to see how other brewers play with that style, right?
You know, and the key is fresh. You know, when you do an IPA, they fade so quick. So if you've got the clientele or a market to push that much beer without it sitting – absolutely.
I mean, you have multiple IPAs on. You're a hophead, right?
Through and through. I got hop ink on my arm. So, yeah.
I guess that does. If I just stare at your tats more there, I guess that would make it a little more official, right?
Yeah. I try to do – it's basically my resume on my sleeve.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yep. So
– yeah, I have a LinkedIn profile. I don't have a tat sleeve, so I never thought about it that way. Maybe I should do that.
You have to be passionate about what you do to pull this off, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm passionate about what I do.
People look at you funny.
I don't know if I'm passionate about what I do. No, I'm kidding. Of course I'm passionate about what I do. Podcasts, whatever I'm doing, right?
Right.
Well, okay. So what was I going to talk about next? So you've been at Axel now a couple of years.
2.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. The tap room seems to be doing well. I see lots of events going on. Every time I've been there, it's been pretty steady, pretty busy. I love that parking lot. I mean, there's like three spots or something in it.
Six plus one handicap.
I'm just kidding. I remember the first time I came there and I was like, this is a parking lot. Holy shit. Right. But what was that brewery really built for?
It's more for the community.
It is for the community. Yeah. It's a good example of a community-based brewery with a great beer garden.
You know, and if you look at a lot of the people in the area, ride bikes, they walk.
You have a lot of bike racks in front. That instantly was what drew me into it. There's a bike lane on Livernois could take to it. It's a gorgeous bike lane. It's a good thing about Ferndale. Ferndale's been pretty progressive on adding in bike lanes and making things a bit more walkable than other cities. You know, I live in Berkeley and I bike around Berkeley and Royal Oak and all those areas a lot. And I bike into Ferndale sometimes, but Berkeley's not really there on that. It's like they want to be, and they look at Ferndale for sure. And I think Royal Oak wants to be a little more too, but it's all traffic things. And I think Ferndale said, we're just going to do it. And we're going to do it along 9 Mile, which would be our busiest road, but they did it.
Yep. You know, and it's one of those you have to have, you know, community that's willing to put the money down to it. And also just sometimes, like you say, just take that stand and say, this is what we're going to do. That community is just one that supports itself. It's unusual to a lot of the local area because they love what they do. They love where they're at, and they love supporting local businesses, which is really cool. But you just don't see that everywhere.
No. I wish we saw it more.
Yep. A lot of communities are willing to drive 20, 25 minutes to go to their favorite restaurant instead of saying, hey, why don't we have our favorite restaurant here? You know?
Yeah. What drew me to live in Berkeley and this whole area was that actually I wanted to be – I lived in Troy and I don't want to sit here and knock Troy, but you know, Troy's typical suburban neighborhood area and people are, you know, driving everywhere. And I didn't like biking around in Troy, but when I moved to Berkeley, I could do that, right? And I'm on a regular basis, I'm doing errands by bike and I could bike up to a Trader Joe's and get grocery and beer. And I bike into Royal Oak a lot and Ferndale a little bit when I can. And but my point was I've changed my attitude of where I shop and where I patronize. And I try to support as much in my little local downtown area of Berkeley as possible. There's only a couple bars there and some restaurants, but you know, everything I'm doing, I'm trying to do that. Even the little gifty shops when I'm buying gifts for people. I mean, yes, I could buy all that on Amazon, but that aspect of supporting those businesses, that's really kind of rewired my brain a bit. I'm now almost, I'm about 3 years in out of the house I own in Berkeley.
Very nice.
And yeah, I get that now. So when I see a brewery like Axial that clearly is looking at it that way, and it gets me excited. It says, okay, that's the kind of brewery that like I want to be out there supporting.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
You know, and I'm a huge Michigan guy. Seeing Michigan down as far as we've been for years, it's nice to see people stick up for us and locals saying, hey, we're coming together to make this state strong. I really think we've kind of pushed that together and grown so much in the last 5 years. The beer industry is really they love each other. We help each other. It's kind of helped support that thought. How can we work together to make the state better? How can we work together or do stuff together to draw revenue to help local communities? We've done a great job in my mind of helping and at least making it in light or to bringing it to the focal attention. You know.
Well, I think Michigan in general has always been a great tourism state for all our natural resources, and the beer industry as another aspect of tourism, beer tourism, we were really ahead of that here in Michigan. Mm-hmm. As I travel into other states, you probably see this too. It's only the last couple of years that some of these states have had this explosion of breweries.
Absolutely.
And now they're looking at states like Michigan and saying, okay, how can we have our guild, you know, Michigan Brewers Guild as powerful or as together, I guess you could say, as it is in Michigan and in other states. And how can we get people here for tourism? I was just down in Columbus a couple of weeks ago. I went to BrewDog.
Yep.
I stayed at the beer hotel, the Doghouse Hotel. Yeah, nice. It's pretty dope.
I've heard good things.
And they had 30 breweries, maybe more, in that market, but all of them were a couple of years old.
Right.
So what I didn't see was all of them necessarily working together in collaborations yet, but that'll probably come. It's just that it's all new. I thought I saw some stat that it was like in the last 3-4 years, they've gone from 50 breweries to like 250 in Ohio.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Where Michigan, I don't want to say it's all been gradual, but it's been a bit more gradual because we were kind of ahead of the game here, starting in the, you know, the 90s and then kind of coming back to life in early 2000s. And now, you know, a lot more the last couple of years. But still, like, we have a deeper bench here, kind of back to your talent. And how, you know, we've had all these brew pubs of the year and had all these brewers that have meddled like yourself.
Right.
You know, we have a pretty deep bench here that kind of started with home brewing where you started and has kind of moved on up in it. And, you know, we were probably one of the first states really to get some of these brewing schools like Schoolcraft College and, was it K College that's doing that and Central and everyone else that's doing it.
Yeah, I think there's three or four. I think MSU has a field program.
Oh, that's right. MSU who
they're
really
doing more agriculture for the industry as well.
The hops industry, right?
Not just hops. They're trying to figure out what barleys will grow in Michigan and be sustainable.
I think there's like a barley association now or something.
There is.
Isn't there?
UP is a little bit heavier on it, but they're finding some of the climate in the lower upper lower.
Yep,
they can still handle the like 6-row. Some of the 2-rows, they don't grow as well in Michigan. Certain Pilsner malts just don't grow. So they found the one strain of 6-row that is doing really well.
So how much of what you brew is 6-row?
Unfortunately, right now, not much.
Not much? Okay.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Is it more 2-row?
Mostly 2-row and Pilsner malt.
Okay.
Are my base malts.
Is that because you're doing a lot of lighter style? Well, you have a decent amount of lighter styles on your list?
Both, yes.
Including some of this Noble Ghost that we should drink some more of.
Right. Yeah. Let's finish that one off. We got one more to tie into.
I know. I only have to go to Costco after this. So
nice. I won't say anything else. But I use a ton of different malts. Like everybody's got your favorite base malt. Mine is Great Western Malting Company, usually grown Dakotas through Idaho and up into like lower Canada.
Okay.
I use a little bit of Canadian malt, Pilsner malt. I've used quite a bit of German Pilsen malt. And I try to keep a couple, not necessarily manufacturers, but wholesalers. That way you can kind of work with everybody. A lot of good people in the industry, a lot of good salespeople that you try to throw them the bone every now and again, help them out, use their product. As many times as we use other like weird ingredients that some people just don't source, you have to kind of have a lot of contacts, a lot of connection to keep it real.
So an example of that on the hop side would be who? Top hops, right?
Top hops.
You're probably one of the early ones that probably worked with top hops.
I was the first person to
buy it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I want to say that's probably the first time I heard their name.
Right.
Was at 51 North, and you worked with Sean and his dad, Mark. Yeah, yep. Thanks.
Yep.
And,
great people.
I've worked with them, actually. Yep. So I've done two bike tours from Fenton Winery and Brewery to Top Hops.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, fact, that's a nice pedal.
In fact, if he agrees, I'm going to do one next year again called Tour to Hops.
Very cool.
So, but yeah, that's a great place out there. They were a little ahead of the game, at least on this side of the state.
I think they're actually killing it. They're a little bit unique from way most people dry and kind of package or process their hops. They dry them with air, not heated air. A lot of places will actually use heated air. To me, they're different, you know, and I think the way their soil is and the chemicals they use, I shouldn't say chemicals, but the fertilizers they use, I think really draw everything together. It's a unique product, and I think their Chinook is one of the favorite hops that I have of theirs.
Okay.
But I use a ton of Cascade, a ton of Chinook, and a bunch of Centennial. My long cut IPA is most top hop.
They're probably like 5-6 years into production now.
Least six, because I would – almost 3 years here and 4 years at 51 North.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Maybe that is. Dark, okay.
You know, but
wow.
Love what they do out there. I try to source most of my hops through a Michigan either company or farm. It's harder to do with barley just because there's not enough grown in this area.
Yeah. I get it.
Quality, they're not there yet. You know, when you get certain grain sizes are larger and smaller. They don't mill properly, so your efficiency goes down. I could go on and on about it. But hops, like I think that we're ahead of the curve. We're unique because our soil conditions and our climate conditions are so much different than what they're getting in Europe and what they're getting on the West Coast. I do buy some of the unique hops from either other breweries or direct from like Yakima Valley. But I'd say probably at least 30 to 40% are top hops.
That's a pretty big percentage. Yep. So yep. Axel's obviously been cool with that, in favor of that.
Absolutely.
Because there can be a cost difference, of course, of having to buy local not really?
Not really.
They've kind of brought some of that down now?
When you look at overall price, I mean, even if they are $1 to $2 higher a pound, they deliver.
Yeah. Okay.
And they won't,
I got you.
And they won't charge you. Being that it's on my way home, you know, and Sean and Mark are friends of mine.
Yeah.
We split that cost every now and again. If I know I need something, I can just stop at the farm on my way home. So it's fantastic for me because if I need a thing on spot to where it's right away or I forgot to order, I can pick it up relatively quickly.
I remember the first time I came out to the farm there and, Sean, I jump in the truck with Sean and then he cracks open a couple beers and I'm like, I can't do that. He's like, dude, you're on my farm, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, it makes me look like such a city boy of, like, following the rules and whatever, you know? Like, we could have been shooting guns and drinking beer out there because it's their farm and it's their property. And we're kind of out in the country. We're definitely out in the country. And, you know, he kind of looked at me and smiled. He's like, we're just driving into a field, you know? I'm like, oh, okay. I get it, right? Okay, I feel so stupid, you know? But yeah, what a nice property out there. And they've added a lot to it in a couple of years. I haven't been out there since the summer of 2016. So they've grown
considerably.
Yeah, they've added a lot more acreage, haven't they?
I want to say they're about 16 acres right now.
Oh, wow. Yep. That's a lot.
Yep. Which is they're putting on new brands or new strains, whatever you want to call it. They'll be a player. I think they're pretty much set to where they're selling out a lot of their product. And as they grow, they'll figure that hurdle out.
I think that's probably the hardest thing is the supply demand part.
Correct. You know, and freshness. You know, you try to keep fresh. You know, brewers don't want to buy old hops because that plays into IPAs. If you use old hop, you're going to get cheesy flavors or other off flavor that you wouldn't get with fresh hops, or you lose some of that little bit of dynamic from the fresh hops.
You know? Did you do a fresh hop ale then?
I hate them things.
No? Is it super hard to work with?
Such a pain in the ass.
It seems like it would be the hardest thing ever to work with.
Yes. Unless you have like a large Randall or a hop torpedo or whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
It's almost impossible because you're putting things in bags so they don't plug your whirlpool. Pulling out wet hops, you know, when you put 30 pounds of hops in something.
Oh, God.
Now add liquid to all that. You're trying to pull out 100, 120 pound bag sometimes, or several bags. The mess that it makes, the weight that you have to pull out, it's just not worth it.
Okay.
You know, and if you throw them in without the bags, then they plug your heat exchanger. So that's about a $1,000 repair to tear it apart and put it back together.
I'm sure the management Axel wouldn't be too happy about that, would they?
I think they wouldn't care as much as I would.
Oh.
Because I'm the one having to do the labor.
You're living on that equipment.
You're shutting your production schedule down. I mean, there's many aspects of that that I would be cussing a lot if that happened.
Oh, we don't want that. This is a family show here. No, I'm kidding. This is not a family show.
Oh, so you can cuss as much as you want. There would be words that you wouldn't even want. Trust me.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me on that.
No, I want nice Adam. I don't want mad cussing Adam.
So. Adam doesn't even like that.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure Sarah does not like that, right?
No, she's fine with it.
She's fine with it? Yeah.
She
likes to swear?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Usually at me. But
oh, well, because you're married.
That's understandable.
So. And soon to have a kid, which will make her swearing at you probably a lot more.
I'm expecting it.
Yeah.
I'm overly expecting it. But it's exciting. It's something I've never experienced. I wanted kids when I was young and just kind of never found the right person.
Sure.
And when I did, luckily, we didn't have kids because it always worked out the wrong way. So, yeah, I'm happy with the way everything turned out. You know, sometimes you got to fall or go through troubles to make things proper or to go through the right steps. And
I just think getting married a little later like this, you just know a lot more. You come in a lot more experienced. You probably made some of those mistakes. I didn't get married till I was like 30, mm-hmm. and now I'm 45. So I'm multiple years in of that process. But I have to say, like, I was a little more educated on the world at that point.
You know,
so I think there's a big advantage to that.
Yeah, we all change from 20 to 30 to even 40.
Yeah.
You think differently. You act differently. You're into different things. It definitely helped me to find out who I was and what I wanted. In my 30s, like, I was career focused. That's all I really thought of is, how do I get in this? How do I start my own brewery? How do I become a brewer? How do I become a head brewer, I should say.
Sure.
But I mean, it was something I really wasn't worried about dating as much. I was just worried about how do I become what I want in a career, and how do I make a living or a livelihood out of it?
Now here you are, multiple years in, making a living. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. You got to finish
that. Things work out for the right reasons.
So I just cracked open here another beautiful looking crowler of Velvet what?
Velvet Elsie.
Elsie.
Yep.
I get it.
Yep.
It's a milk stout.
Yes, correct. So
ooh, that smells good.
A cow is the logo, and we go from there.
With this crawler that says Livernois is for lovers. So the Livernois tap house, basically, or the brewery is off Livernois.
Correct.
So the brewery's not officially called Axel Brewing Company when you think about it, right? It's just
it's the Livernois tap. Is,
why did they do that? Why did they do that, you think?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
I really don't know. They wanted to showcase new, I think, that we were kind of starting in a new facility.
Because the original facility was a production only facility in Royal Oak. Drive by it all the time because I go to that Meijer there, and I see it. Do you guys still own that building?
We're still in it.
You're still in it?
Yep. We're warehousing a few things, and we use
– like extra kegs and stuff over there?
All the above. Literally all the above. Anything that we can't fit at the restaurant usually has a home there.
Okay. Well, I guess that's nice that you got that extra little space.
Yes. Yes. If not, we'd be, you know, it's hard not to clutter when you look at overall having a restaurant, having a brewery.
Oh, yeah.
Year to year, you collect more things for decorations. So your Christmas time decorations, you don't want just sitting around in the brewery or cluttering things in the restaurant.
I run a business out of my house, so I completely understand.
Yes.
Half of my basement, my garage. Luckily, Motor City Brewworks, for example, has a small warehouse space across the street from them. they allow me in the season to leave four bike rentals down there.
Nice.
Right. So I don't have to haul them back and forth.
Nice.
But in the off season, I bring them back in my garage and I'll have something like 8 to 10 bikes in the very back on 2-tier racks. Besides the fact that I have, let's see, I just re-upped my pint glasses for next year. So I have about 300 pint glasses in boxes. And then from the charity rides I do out of Clubhouse BFD in the spring and fall, let's see, I have a million cones, signs, those skinny, tall, like construction orange things.
Yeah.
Well, I bought some of those on Amazon, believe it or not, Prime. So I have like 8 of those. I can't imagine all the other crap I have in there, tables. Yeah. So anyway, I totally understand. I would love to have – I've thought about that before. I was like, I'd love to have like another space like that. Now I've just found creative ways to fit it in my house.
Right. Totes. Totes stack wonderfully.
Yeah. I definitely got a lot of those too though. So I totally relate. Well, this is a great milk stout.
Thank you.
Is this a recipe you've been doing for a while?
Actually, this is one I tried to make, Axel, a little bit different than anything I've done. The great part about having the freedom to make whatever you want, or at least make the styles that you want, was fun for me. It makes it a little bit more fun. So I just tried to use my knowledge in the brewing industry, a few things that I liked about other recipes, but I didn't really look at my other recipes. I just kind of like wing them at first and then try to dial them in from there. This was one of the stouts that I absolutely fell in love with when I made it. And it's like, you know what? I think I nailed it.
Let's it's really drinkable.
It. Let's just leave it the way it is.
It's smooth. It really fits it on what I think of a milk stout.
Yep. And at I don't, 6%. What's the
alcohol? Oh, it's 6%. Yeah. I was just going to ask you. Okay. So the alcohol is 6%. Yep. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy drinking for a dark beer.
I'd say so. Like, I don't know if I even really like Imperial milk stouts because I find I can't drink a lot of them or it'll jack up my stomach. But this is one that I could probably whoop down a couple pints of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Roasty, but you get the sweetness from the milk and kind Definitely. Of finishes nice and kind of creamy on the palate, but it's not overly sweet. And you still get the dryness from the roasty.
I think as I've gotten older, I've appreciated roasty more. Mm-hmm. I'd say when I was a young buck, I did not care for that flavor in beer. And now I've just grown to appreciate – I think I've mm-hmm. kind of started to reappreciate porter.
Gotcha.
And – well, I think I always did for stouts, but more than just a creamy stout, like all variants of stout, dry stouts, definitely something roastier, coffee, more coffee flavors. And I'm not really right. even a coffee drinker, but I definitely have come into that through beer. That's weird how that works.
That's one of those notes that anybody that hate dark beer are hating on. Usually the coffee, burnt, yeah. roasty. I used to make a chocolate stout with the velvet. What was it? Velvet Mousse at 51 North.
Oh, okay. You know, I've had that.
Honestly, there's no relation at all from the velvet aspects, but it was chocolatey. It had a nice dark chocolate perception. It was not roasty at all. And I can't tell you how many people I've swayed to actually try dark beer by saying, you don't like chocolate? So, I mean, there's many right. different flavors in dark beer. Roasty is only one of them. And I think people automatically think that that's like Guinness with a heavy,
totally
heavy dark, rich, roasty coffee flavor, which yeah. doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I really work hard when I'm taking people into other breweries doing tastings to try to get that in front of them to say, you really need to not think of it that way.
Right.
And there's so many cool variants. A lot of breweries have kind of played with that and take it roasty out. Like I don't know, Atwater's Vanilla Java Porter is
yep.
and that's only like 4.5%.
Right.
So that's almost like that's like a session beer.
You know, and some of the beers I like to brew is just my smart ass personality. I like when people are offended or they're puzzled by things. So the rye that I made at 51 North, I made it.
I saw light, that on the list.
Crystal,
okay.
crystal clear, and it's sparkling. It looks like Budweiser if it's poured in a glass.
Wouldn't look like a rye.
Has zero color to it. So when you see somebody like, oh, I want one of those. And to see the look on their face that they don't like flavor, they don't like hops, like that just makes me giggle on the inside. Same with dark beer. You know, when you set a dark beer in front of somebody and they're like, ooh, it's dark. No, I won't even try it. When you get that look on their face of, oh my gosh, this is actually good or it's drinkable, that to me, it makes me feel great. But it's also a way for me to show that I'm having fun with it. I'm doing things that –
because if you're not having fun, it's yep. just another job.
Absolutely. And it's a hard job at that. You know, we lift 55 pounds of grain. Just to give you an idea, this batch was a 20-barrel batch, so I had a split batch. Was probably about a 1,200 pounds per per batch.
Holy crap.
I'm lifting these 50 pounds at a time, sometimes twice per bag. So it's very physically demanding. Not only are you putting it in the mash tun, you're stirring the mash tun, you're pulling the grain out. I'm exhausted by the end of a double brew.
So you're not leaving work and going to the gym and doing another hour on the treadmill. That's what you're telling me.
Hell no.
Yeah, that's kind of the difference.
Yeah,
I think people a lot of times think brewers, big guys drink all the time. And yeah, okay, so you probably drink on a pretty regular basis, but you're doing hard work to do this. That's why you don't have 60, 70-year-olds being a brewmaster anymore, not in this type of capacity.
You do, but usually you're stepping up to the point of management to
where sure.
you're not having to throw stuff around. Yeah. You're teaching the younger generation what to do and then let them get their hands dirty a little bit.
As it should be though.
Yep.
Learn from that experience.
I'm still hoping for that job.
Someday. I think we're both working toward that. Someday I'm going to have people do that stuff for me too. And I could just kind of come in and,
right.
I don't know, try to look pretty or something
right.
like that. Right.
You know, and me and my wife have honestly talked about trying to start our own a few times and it puts you right back to that. You're number one. You're going to be doing everything. So it kind of shifts focus a little bit, makes you actually think, do I want to do this? Am I ready to do this? And is it worth doing it? When you get to the point to where your back can't take lifting 55 pounds of grain anymore, you figure it out or you move on, one of the two.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm regular at Royal Oak Brewery just down the road here. And Tim's a good example of that there. Tim is now the GM at Royal Oak Brewery, but he was the brewer, had been brewing professionally for a lot of years. Right. Now he's got younger guys under him.
Jeremy,
who you know really good, who also came from Great Baraboo, right? Yeah, he's doing a great job. I'm a Mug Club member there, so I'm in there on a very regular basis. I'm sure I'll be there Friday drinking. Yep. And, but yeah, a good example of that. I remember I asked him, he goes, I kept having back problems.
Yep.
So he said, okay, I moved up. Now he's GM and he's doing good stuff. He brought in good people. He definitely brought in Jeremy for that reason.
Right.
And Richard, his assistant.
Yep. Both good guys.
I think they're really doing a good job in there.
Agree.
It's a good example of a brewery that's been around for a long time that maybe doesn't always get that respect anymore because they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, agree.
You know?
Agree.
So
you know, and that was probably one of the best things for my reputation was Jeremy came in and just started doing everything right, kept Baraboo clean, and then just it really helped me.
Because for you leave there and you know you worked hard to clean it up and get it rolling again.
Right.
You don't want to just leave and then it just all falls to shit.
Like correct.
That sucks. That's the worst thing ever.
Yep.
You know, because you're like, oh, great. That didn't accomplish anything except that I could be proud of my work, but we want the brewery to still be there.
Absolutely.
Right. And he kind of did that. And then he was, working a little bit at Woodward Avenue Brewers. And then he.
Yep. You know, and actually, I was seeking out somebody to take my place. It's tough sometimes to find the right person for the right job. Mary and Louie were the owners at the time, asked me, do you think you could help us out? You may know somebody that's interested, and I put it out there. I had one person that was interested. That was it. Greg Burke called me out of the blue. Who was running the Woodward Avenue and said,
right.
I got a guy that's passionate that really wants to learn, that he's been working with me. I think he's ready. He came in. Just what a wonderful personality. Love the guy to death.
Had him on the show before. You know, now we're friends.
Yeah.
And, good guy. Definitely. Wow. It's funny how we're so connected, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that respect. And then who eventually took over at Woodward Avenue Brewers, Chris Colburn.
Colburn, yeah.
He's going to be on my show next month.
Cool.
So I was doing some fun event with the Bee Nectar crew, and then Chris was on that bus. This was like in August when it was their anniversary party. And
nice.
We took out a bunch of the out-of-towners that they brought in for a fun little bus tour of the city. So Chris brought some beer on. I got to talk to him. I didn't really know him that well, but I think he's doing kind of some fun stuff over there. So kind of full circle, kind of back to you. I just want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, not a
problem. Thank you for bringing these two great beers, this Noble Ghost and the Velvet Elsie. I wish you luck. I wish you luck with Axel. I wish you luck with the new baby, the boy. How exciting is that?
Oh, it's through the roof. I mean, I can't say anything else. Like, it makes me smile every time I even think about it. But
I love hearing that. I love all the success. So cheers to your success.
Cheers.